First, I'm going to say the set-aside prayer. Everything I think, provide the steps, recovery, big book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your new truth each day. God, help me carry your message tonight. Amen.
Amen.
All right, Patty went to a cross-stitch thing, and she copied these before she left, and she'll make it bigger next week. She can adjust it, but bear with me. This week, we are on the on Sunday night. We're on step four, and we've covered resentment, and we've covered those pages, and we covered the resentment cheat sheet, and we read the pages on fear, and the instructions on fear, and this is called the second step proposition exercise, which confuses everybody because it comes from the second step chapter. We agnostics, they ask the question, is God everything or nothing? What is our choice to be? And fear is related when I choose me and not God, always, 100%. And so this is an exercise on how to be free of fear. Anybody think that's a good idea? Mm-hmm. And fear dominates our lives. Remember, we read that. And all of our anger comes from fear. And so this has been very helpful. I got this from Dave Fredrickson's 2001 workshop that's on XA Speakers. I think it's still on there. They cover the 12 steps, him and Matt Houston. Matt's passed away. Mark Houston, he's passed away, but I think Dave's still alive, and I don't think he'd mind us doing this. I've done this, I think I've gone over this maybe 25 times in the 12 years, maybe more, but it's always helpful, and I saw some new things tonight. I must admit, I like to take notes and prepare, but it was pretty hard with the small print, so that may save you a lot of babbling for me. It says the second step proposition exercise is a specific spiritual exercise. So in AA, we want to be physically fit, but we're talking about our spiritual fitness because our spiritual fitness will determine how I react to any situation and will also determine whether I'm able to say to alcohol, bad idea. And it's interesting, anybody interested in attaining a new level in the fourth dimension of existence? Well, what the hell does that mean? Well, it means, do we want to have a new level of spiritual fitness in the world of the spirit? The fourth step on fear ties in, this exercise ties in with step 10 and how we look at fear all day long and watch for it cropping up and ask God to remove it. So this is an exercise that you can start using right away, because if we're awake and we're alive, we're going to get fear. The whole purpose of this exercise is to have a new experience. Now, why do I need a new experience? Because my old experience didn't work. And my old experience of life was full of fear. And I want a new experience. And I want to discover that which has been blocking me off from God. Now, where does it say that we do that in the big book? Does anybody remember? On page 64, after we take the third step prayer, it says, good job, you did the third step, but nothing's going to happen unless next at once you face and be rid of the things blocking you from God. Because if you want God to direct your life, he can't do it if he's blocked out. And fear is when I'm blocking God out. It's really stupid when you think about it, isn't it? But we do it. And for alcoholics, it's almost like breathing, being afraid. And I don't want to be afraid anymore. I don't want to waste any more time on fear. Did anybody waste a lot of time being afraid? Yeah. In fact, it dominated. Remember, it's the evil and corroding thread through our fabric of life. In this exercise, I'm going to identify the areas of my life where my ego is still trying to get away with control through self-will, justification, and delusion. So I'm going to identify the areas of our lives where my ego, which is my thinker. Does anybody have a thinker that tells you things that aren't true, of course? And we listen to him. That's why we're insane. And we're still trying to get away. And how does my ego try to control me? Look what it says. Self-will. Self-will, remember, is trying to satisfy my instincts of life. What I want matters, remember? Justifying. Margaret said justifying her motives were always good, right? Yes. Well, you were angry. You're always right. Yeah, well, what did that get us? And I had the delusion my whole life that it says on page 61, and this is the delusion that brought me to my knees, that I could rest. Rest means to pull. I could rest satisfaction and happiness out of life if I managed well. Think about that. And I started to do that when I was 5 years old. It never worked. And it was a delusion because I thought that's what I had to do to be happy. I had to fix the world so I would be okay. Did anybody else have that? Anybody still have it? We still do. This exercise should provide each of us with tools and directions for how to get back onto the spiritual beam. Have you ever seen a person on the balance beam? Some people make it look really easy. You know, you see these gymnasts in the Olympics. Put me up there. Put us up there. It's not that easy to stay on the beam. And when they start to get off the beam, do you notice how they use their hands to balance themselves? Well, what we do is we use the steps and the instructions for fear and anger to get back on the beam. So we start to slide off. We say the prayer for anger, the prayer for fear, and we do these exercises. And when we're on the beam, we're with God. Is that a good place to be? Now, if you're with God, there's no way you could be disturbed. There's no way you can't not feel okay. Whatever you feel when you're with God, that's the best you're ever going to feel. Did anybody try to feel good through alcohol or drugs? It's never going to be as good as just being with God. And it won't kill you. It's going to guide us through the areas of our lives that need the immediate focus of God's love. Now, what this exercise does is it tells me right away what area of my life I'm managing and which area of my life I have to give back to God, and it has specific directions and gives us specific for our prayers and provides a vision for our life. Now, where does it say we must carry a vision in our life? Page 85, every day I must carry a vision of whose will? God's will into what? All my activities, all day long. And so when we do this, we get back onto the vision of what's God's will for me toward which we need to move. Now on page 53 of the big book, that's where they get the second step proposition from, and it's quoted. And we've gone through this a lot, but I'll go through it again. When I became an alcoholic, does anybody remember what time of day it was when you became an alcoholic? Which day of the week? Well, they tell you when you became a real alcoholic, when you're crushed. See, you can see that you're a true alcoholic at the moment. You're crushed by a self-imposed crisis you could not postpone or evade. So what was that moment? What was that moment, that crisis? That's when you hit bottom. See, that's the description of completely hitting the bottom, when you could see the truth about your situation. So when they say, when I became an alcoholic, when I could see the truth about the hopelessness and futility of life as I was living it. And I did that not because I woke up one day and say, I have a hopeless and futile life. I'm going to go to AA. I was crushed, and it's self-imposed. So that moment it happened, I had to fearlessly face the question that either God is everything or he's nothing. God, either he is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? And I got down on my knees and I asked God to help me. I can see it as clear as it was years ago. And I do that today. And this is the only choice you make all day long. See, people think AA is very complicated. You know, oh, it's got this book, and it's either God is everything or no, he's nothing in your life right at this moment. If he's everything in your life, you'll be okay. You'll follow his will. If he's nothing, you're going to follow your will. How's that working for there? So this is the choice we make all the time. Now, we do it unconsciously. We choose ourselves. We don't like something at work or somebody in the food store or in the highway or in the meeting. I may be upsetting somebody right now. Get over it. So we do it. We choose it all the time. We decide how things should be, and then we're disturbed. So this is how we look at that choice and how it's affecting our lives so we could stop whatever we're doing and get back to God. For most of us, intellectually, we said God is everything and moved on to step three. But you see, intellectually is not complete surrender. Intellectually is your thinking with your reasoning that you're going to surrender. Now, the problem with that is that where does our disease center? In our mind. So with my mind, I'm thinking and I'm making a decision about something intellectually to surrender. And so a lot of people do that and move right on to step three. But he says for the real alcoholic, that decision has to be made deep down within at the gut level of concession. Now, concession is really the action of surrender. So the surrender has to be that I'm really nothing. God is everything. And that I'm a broken person, and that relying on me can never work. Does everybody understand that? Now, do you believe it? And do you think it when you pray in the morning? Is that why you pray in the morning and ask God for direction? Are you surrendering? It has to be deep down. Now, how can you tell when a new guy's surrendered? You ask him to do something, and he'll do it. Stu and I... He didn't come tonight, Stu? He's not here? Friday? The guy Friday? Oh, good, good, good. Because I saw somebody Friday and they were telling me, yeah, good. And so I always see if people, I say, come to the meeting and join us and we'll see. And I see if they come. And that's how you know that there's some surrender in them. It says, everybody wants to give up drinking, don't they, usually, when they come in here? All right, we want to give up drinking. We surrendered that we don't want to drink, but the decision of conceding my whole life, there's a difference, right? There's a big difference. And it says the same gut level where we finally had to admit defeat with our alcoholism is the same gut level that we have to give up, give God everything. Remember after the third step, there's a warning. Does anybody remember? It says, you read the third step here, it says, remember, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we're going to abandon ourselves utterly to him. And then in how it works, doesn't it say, there's one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now? The longest distance in the world can be from the head to the heart. I think we die there. We can intellectualize things, but what they mean by the heart is really deep in your soul to admit something to your innermost self. Remember it says that's the first step in recovery? What's the first step in recovery? We had to fully concede to our innermost selves that I'm an alcoholic. The steps won't work till I fully concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. Because if I am, then I understand that I'm powerless over alcohol. In the first step, it doesn't say you're an alcoholic, does it? None of the steps say you're an alcoholic, do they? But if you're an alcoholic, you're powerless over alcohol. And it says we have to admit to this concession at deepest level for to offer us humility in the amount we require to achieve success with serenity and to live a happy and useful life. Now that's really a key idea. What is the essential thing? We talk a lot about all sorts of things. I have to be humble. Now, I was humbled by my self-centeredness and my alcohol use and my managing my life, but now I have to be humbled each day, all the time, by my inability to run my life, my powerlessness. I have to, humility is the essence, he says, of humility is seeking God and seeing to be the person God created. And so what we want is to be humble as best we can. Now I wrote, humble drives seeking, and seeking drives action. We talk about God came when he, if he sought, right? So the humility drives me to seek God, and the seeking of God drives me to action. And it says, so we blow right past the God is everything or nothing question, and we say, I can't, God can, you've heard that, I'll let him. That's really nice of you. Great, you're going to let God do it. So what does that mean? You're going to sit there and God's just going to zap you all day. It's not happening. It makes sense, I understand. And don't report me to New York for saying that. But it says we hit step three with our mind. We want to hit it with our heart. There we concede to step three, only my mind as well. And usually only with respect to drinking. We agree in our mind's eye to have a new director, right? Everybody wants that. And to let God tell us what we should do. But do we listen to God? And do we do that? We agree to be God's agent, and we let him empower us in the works we do. And I looked up empower. I don't know where I wrote it. Empower gives someone the authority to do something. So when we empower God to run our lives, we give him the authority to do it, and then we get in the car, we take it away. We start driving the car. You see how alcoholism works? Sober. This is what kills us. We empower God, but then we take it back, and we drive the car. We intellectually say, God, I want you to run my life. We talk about it at the meeting, and then get out in the car, and we're yelling at somebody on the phone. And lastly, we agree that God is going to be our new father. He will provide what we need if we keep close to him and perform his work well. Now, what I just read to you is the contract in step three that you make with God. He's going to be your new employer. You work for God. You rely on him and stay close to him and do his work well. And everything will be okay. Isn't that great? Now, how do we do this? That's the question. Well, this exercise is one way in how you allow this to happen. How when you're playing God, you stop and you let go of those areas in your life where you're playing God. Like a good father, God will love us unconditionally. He will provide what we need if we get out of line. He will correct us back on track gently. I wrote, if I let him. I can ignore his direction and his correction. I've done it. Anybody else do it? And then how do you feel? We don't feel good. Now, God's created us in a way so that he disciplines us that we don't really feel good when we're away from him. And we get disturbed. Now, we didn't realize that when we came to AA. We just thought we were irritable and restless all the time and very anxious. Anybody like that? But that was basically because we were running the show. That's the symptoms of our spiritual illness. So with respect to our drinking, our AA life may seem somewhat manageable for a time. Everybody who comes here and stops drinking, their life gets better for a while. You know, you're not drunk all the time and carrying on. And things get better. And we have surrendered, we have given up and admitted defeat, conceded to our innermost selves that we're powerless, and may have actually stopped trying to run the whole show. Now, you don't actually say that at your first meeting, but that's what you're saying when you come here. You admit you're an alcoholic. It's a big deal, right? To come to the meeting, that you need help. And you feel better when you come to meetings and you stop drinking. Does that happen? It's true, right? So why would anybody ever go out and drink? You come to meetings, you stop drinking, bad things aren't happening to you. Why would you ever drink again? Because you have alcoholism, which means when you're sober, you don't like the way things are and things build up and then your mind says, get a drink. So here's what they say. In relatively short order, the same alcoholic is now sober. That means not without alcohol. They're not talking about peace, contentment, joy. They're talking about no alcohol in your body. Only have conceded steps two and three in his mind. Can't figure out why he's having trouble in other areas of his life. Things start to turn to crap. Has anybody experienced that? You come in here, things are great, 30 days, everybody's giving you a hug, coins, cheering, things are getting, but then things aren't really any better. You're not reacting differently, you're reacting the same. You're worried, you're concerned, things are bothering you. Now it says, his AA life seems okay. Now I don't know what that means, when your AA life's okay, but the rest of it starts to unravel. And he knows he's missed something, but he can't figure out what, nor can he figure out why. So in other words, people come here, they get sober, they all feel better, they think AA is great, they get 30, 60, 90 days coins, and then you don't see them. Something happens. They stop coming. And they're going to try to talk about that in the next few paragraphs. First, we have only conceded our mind. That's the problem. Because my mind is my problem and my thinking. So I can concede things in my mind. It says, but I've left my ego unchecked so it can rebuild. Now, what is the ego? People say, edge God out. Well, that sounds great. But it's a sense of self-esteem or self-importance or self-conceit, self-image, self-confidence. It's the way you see yourself, the way you see yourself. And it's usually self-centered and it's distorted. And it all has to do in relation to how things are affecting you, my self-esteem, whether I'm being important enough, my self-conceit, I'm so wonderful, how can they do this to me, blah, blah, blah. And it rebuilds if left unchecked. Does anybody ever tell you you're in a situation and your mind says, I don't like what this person's doing to me? Anybody have ever had that happen to them? That's your ego. Now your mind could say, boy, that person's having a bad day, you know? Need to pray for him. No. Our ego says, is that guy ever going to shut up? And look what he's doing to me, and how could he talk to me this way? So here's, they're going to get into some complicated stuff, but I think we can handle it. Henry Thibault was one of AA's founders. He started going to AA meetings in 1940, right after the book came out, maybe 1939. And he was in New York. He was a very prominent psychiatrist, neurologist. And he wanted to go to AA to see what they were doing, because he was never able to help any alcoholics. And he wrote this, and this is from AA Comes of Age. He writes, the typical alcoholic, now this may bother some people, but this is what he says, is a narcissistic, egocentric core. Anybody have a narcissistic, egocentric core? What does he mean? Narcissistic, by the way, is not good. It means grandiose sense of self-importance, lives in a fantasy world that supports his delusions of grandeur, needs constant praise, sense of entitlement, and demeans or belittles others. It's not good. Anybody guilty of that? I mean, if you were to describe our self-centered personality, that's it. And it's an egocentric core. And it's dominated by these feelings of omnipotence. Now, omnipotence means having unlimited power, being able to do anything, playing God. So this grandiose sense of self-importance, this fantasy world, needing constant praise, is dominated by feelings of being all-powerful. That's an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. You hear that. This is not good, but I think it's true. And this person is intent on maintaining all costs its inner integrity. So in other words, we don't want anybody want to fool with what we think or how we feel. Now, we don't say that, but when people come to me after the meeting, they say, I'm not coming back. You talk about God too much. Well, what are they really telling you? They don't want to be accountable to anybody. They don't want anybody to change them. Now, this reminds me of the story of the alcoholic, the battleship. And I've told this before, I don't know. I think it's good. There's a battleship, and the battleship is the alcoholic. And the battleship is all powerful. It's the biggest battleship in the world. It's got all the guns and everything. And it's sailing on a path. And it sees in the distance this light. And it says to the light, I'm the battleship. Please get out of my way. I'm not changing my course for you. I'm magnificent. I'm Michael the Magnificent. I'm going this way. Don't get my way. And they keep getting closer, and the light says, I'm not moving. Sorry, you better change your course. Well, nobody's going to tell an alcoholic that, right? And so they keep fighting, and they say, you better move. I'm the battleship. And the light says, I'm not moving. And it says, don't you understand what's happening here at the battleship? And the light says, I'm a lighthouse. And you see, that's what we do. We don't want to ever change our course, no matter what's out there. We just keep hitting the rocks. And then we go and we drive some more, we keep hitting more rocks. Nobody's going to tell us what to do. Did anybody before they come in here like criticism? Mm-mm. Anybody tell you what to do? Did you listen? No. He says, inwardly, the alcoholic brooks no control from man or God. I think he's describing us very well. Now listen, normal people are like this too. But we're an extreme example of self-will run right. Isn't that what the book says? Mm-hmm. So we're an extreme example of this. And why is it harmful to us? Because with this personality, we can't stop drinking. We're going to have a personality change, remember? Sufficient to recover from alcoholism. He, the alcoholic, is and must be the master of his destiny. We ask people to give up. We ask them to do things. And they say, yeah, I want to do it, but they just can't do it. He will fight to the end to preserve that position. Now, here's the key. If the alcoholic, and this is the change you see, that's why seeing that coin, that three-year coin, was so powerful, because that person went 6 or 7 years every 5 months, ending up in almost dead. And finally, something happened, and that person was able to get that three-year coin. If the alcoholic can truly accept the presence of a greater power greater than himself, that means you're broken, you're humbled, you start to give up on your narcissism because you're broken, you're defeated. He, by that very step, modifies at least temporarily and possibly permanently his deepest inner structure. We become a seeker and we see our powerlessness. Remember, we have lack of power. We have to see the first step has to be complete defeat, right? Of what? My way, my thinking, the way I'm doing things. It has to be complete. It can't be 99%. I told some lady says, I'm struggling. I said, you have to admit 100% defeat. So the next week she came back, she says, I think I'm 95% there. I said, that's great, but you know, my patients wouldn't like it if I left 5% of the cancer in their body. I said, you got to give up 100%. It's hard to do. And this step is about continuing to give up 100% all the time. And then it says, he by that deepest track, he's no longer typically alcoholic. And so we change. That's just the beginning. But it's a very powerful thing. Why do we talk about the first step has to be taken 100%, right? And it has to be done all the time. And the strange thing, if we can sustain that inner feeling of acceptance, and accepting what? Our powerlessness, and that we need God, he can and will remain sober the rest of his life. So how do you sustain that? Now it says on page, I think it's 13 or 14, Bill says, he finishes the step and he says, I have a new, something's happened to me. It's very powerful. And it says, my friend promised, this is in the hospital, Ebby Thatcher, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Isn't that great? And it says you have to believe in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility, and that's required. That's what he's talking about, giving up your narcissistic, egocentric core. To do what? To establish and maintain the new order of things. That's the essential requirements. Now here's the deal. Simple, sounds simple. It's not easy. He says a price has to be paid. There's no free lunch. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. So what Dr. Thibaut is saying in these complicated words is I have to have my self-centeredness destroyed. And when I'm beginning to let go and be willing to have God direct my life and begin to change and seek Him, it's a big deal. And it says, a religious or spiritual awakening, we talk about a spiritual awakening a lot. He says it's the act, it's an action of giving up my reliance on my own omnipotence. I'm not going to rely on me to be God anymore. I'm aware that there's a power greater than me and I have a relationship with it and I go to it. Did anybody pray this morning? It's a spiritual awakening. We're seeking something outside of ourselves. And do you and when you pray, do you think you can rely on the God you're praying to? Yes. That's a change from being truly alcoholic. The divine individual no longer defies but accepts help, guidance, and control from the outside. Isn't that why we say get a sponsor? Get someone you talk to. Get someone who makes you accountable. Gives you directions. What does the big book say? We have specific directions. Do this and see what happens. Don't do it and see what happens. As the individual relinquishes his negative aggressive feelings towards himself and towards life, he finds himself overwhelmed by strong positive ones, such as love, friendliness, peacefulness, and contentment. Which state is the antithesis of the formless restless and irritability. So I think I'm going to stop there. What he's saying is, this is the surrender, the brokenness, the mission of powerless. It produces a change in you, and it makes you want to change from the way you were to a new relationship with someone greater than yourself. And that's a big change in direction. And then if you seek that power in your life and then you take the actions and the steps, then you're going to go from this negative world to a world of contentment and peace. So I hope this was helpful. And we're going to pick up there and then we'll probably spend 3 weeks on this. It has instructions for fear. But the beginning is very important to set the picture of what's involved in that change in direction for the alcoholic. All right, thank you. Congratulations again to the birthdays.